He entered with a sour look on his face and Greer on his heels. I was just wrapping Jetta's ankle when Greer came to fetch me. What's happened now? The healer asked irritably and then spotted Conran and the open entrance to the passage. I thought your presence in the passage was supposed to be a secret.
Aye, well, now it's not a secret, Ollie pointed out with a scowl. Is Jetta all right?
She twisted her ankle, Rory said with disgust. She'll be limping for a bit, but she'd be able to walk on it now it's wrapped. Raising his eyebrows, he then asked, What's happened here? Who else is hurt?
Mayhap no one, Ollie admitted. Greer fetched you back to check on Kitty and Geordie, and possibly Conran, we thought at the time, though he's fine. When we got here, Conran was missing, and Geordie seemed in a deep sleep. We feared the worst, Cam explained. But Conran had just stepped away to visit the guardrobe, and Geordie woke up in the end. So Kate's probably fine too. Or as fine as she was ere this. He added. Just check her to be sure, Roar. Ollie growled.
Rory nodded and moved to the bedside at once.
Why was Conran's being in the passage a secret?
Geordie asked with a frown as he watched Rory examine Katie.
I did not want you to fret any more than you already were, Ollie admitted. And with Conran keeping an eye from the passage, there was no need for you to. Mayhap you should have two men in the passage at a time to make sure the room is covered despite guardrobe breaks,
Greer said with a frown. Ollie shook his head.
No need. Now that Geordie kens someone is watching, the person can sit in the room with him, and only slip into the passage to watch when neither Geordie nor Rory are in the room.
Shifting his attention to Geordie, he added,
While Rory has left a time or two, ye've yet to do so. Ye should probably leave the room, brother. I ken ye dinna want to, but our watching up until now has been a waste of time since ye've no left our side, except when Rory was with her and that was just to visit the guardrobe. No one is like to try to harm her with ye both here to witness.
Geordie scowled.
You're going to use her as bait. Someone will be watching her at all times, Ollie assured him, and then arched an eyebrow and asked, Can you think of another way to capture whoever shot the arrow into her?
Geordie frowned briefly, but then rubbed his hands over his face and shook his head.
Nay, I cannot imagine anyone wanting to hurt wee Katie. She's as sweet as can be.
There is no change. She does not appear to have been harmed in any way, Rory announced, straightening. In fact, if anything, she's slightly improved.
Really?
Geordie asked, perking up substantially.
Aye,
Rory said and smiled, wryly. We may have another lass survive when I didn't think she would. Ollie considered that as he peered at Katie. And once again it struck him that she could easily be mistaken for Jetta. The black hair, the pale face and petite figure with generous breasts. Their facial features differed. Jetta's eyes were larger, her lips a little fuller, and her face was oval while Katie's was heart-shaped. Other than that, though, the two women could have been sisters.
If we are done in here, we should let Geordie and Katie rest, Rory said suddenly.
Ollie knew from his expression that his brother wanted a word with him away from Geordie. Nodding, he headed for the door, but paused once he reached it and turned back to tell Conran.
The men have offered to take shifts watching Katie and Geordie. I'll come talk to you after we sort out the who and when.
Appearing relieved at this news, Conran nodded and Ollie led the others out of the room. He walked nearly to the stairs before pausing to face Rory. Raising his eyebrows, he said,
I got the feeling you had something you wanted to discuss with me.
Aye, Rory said quietly, and glanced around to include the other men as he said, I have to tell you, Ollie, every time I go into that room,
I think 'tis just like entering the bedchamber at the lodge has been this last 2 months. I mean, Katie almost looks like Jetta lying in that bed," he pointed out. "And we brothers all resemble each other a great deal. In fact, Geordie is just a younger version of you."
"Younger and unscarred," Ollie muttered.
"Aye, but from a distance and on horseback, the two could easily have been mistaken for you and Jetta," he pointed out solemnly.
"You're thinking Jetta was really the target when Katie was shot," Cam suggested quietly, not appearing surprised.
Rory hesitated and then said, "Mayhap. Although Jetta was no even here, and I can't think that anyone here would wish to harm Jetta."
"The archer who loosed that arrow does no have to be from here," Cam pointed out, and then reminded them. "There is that business about her family and someone she feared who would kill her."
"Aye, but her family no ken she's here. No one does," Rory pointed out, seeming now to want to argue against what his own words had suggested.
"As far as we ken, her family has no learned she's here," Ollie corrected him solemnly, feeling he had to at least consider the possibility. But then he shook his head.
"The only thing we ken for certain is that Katie was shot with the arrow and Jetta was pushed down the stairs."
"Aye, but Katie does resemble Jetta, and might have been mistaken for her from a distance," Dougal said solemnly. "And Rory's right. Geordie could have been mistaken for ye from a distance as well.
Probably we all could. And Katie's getting shot brought you and Rory and then Jetta home to Buchanan, where she was pushed down the stairs," Niels pointed out.
Ollie glanced from man to man with surprise.
"You're now all thinking the two attacks are connected."
"Nay, I'm sure they're not thinking that," Rory assured him. "They're just considering this from every angle."
"Although," Cam said now, "it does seem more likely that Katie was mistaken for Jetta than that you have two murderous bastards on your hands. I mean, we already ken the lass was afraid of someone she felt sure would kill her."
"Aye," Dougal said now, "but how would anyone from her family find out she was here? Or about the passages, if that's how they escaped?"
"They would know," Ollie assured them. "At least they should know ken about the passages. Besides, from what I could tell, she was not afraid of her family so much as the man they were forcing her to marry. Do we ken anything about him?" Cam asked with interest. Ollie shook his head.
"Nay, from what we could understand, he was nowhere betrothed. But she was being forced to marry him anyway, and she feared he would kill her."
After a pause, he added,
"Which puts paid to the attacker being a member of Jetta's family. Even if they have somehow tracked her here to Buchanan, they can hardly force her to marry anyone if she's dead."
"Aye, you're right," Rory acknowledged, and then said, "So, we've two separate attackers, one after Katie, and one after Jetta.
Unless it was the other way around, and Jetta was mistaken for Katie when she was pushed down the stairs," Dougal suggested.
Ollie was just blinking in surprise at that suggestion when Niels said,
"What about the poison stew?"
"What?"
Ollie peered at him with amazement.
"What poisoned stew?"
"Oh, I forgot to tell you about that." Dougal scowled with consternation and quickly explained about Robbie's dog dying after eating the charred soup Mavis had thrown out. He ended with, "Mavis feared she'd dumped the stew on some sort of poisonous plant and the dog just gobbled that up with the stew, but..."
"But now you're wondering if Robbie was no right and the stew was poisoned," Ollie said quietly.
Dougal looked uncomfortable. "I just think everything should be considered." Ollie began to rub his temples as he considered what he'd learned.
"Right. So, here are the facts as we ken them. Katie was shot with an arrow. A dog died from eating a stew that was meant for Jetta and Mavis and may or may not have been poisoned. And now Jetta was pushed down the stairs.
Aye, but we're no sure who the arrow was meant for.
Katie may have been the target, or she could have been mistaken for Jetta, Dougal added.
And the stew is less certain, Greer added. There could have been a poisonous plant at the base of the tree where Mavis tossed the stew. Or the stew could have been poisoned and Mavis and Jetta escaped dying simply because Rory forgot to water down the stew as Mavis asked him to.
But I do not think Jetta was mistaken for Katie when she was pushed down the stairs, Cam said solemnly. The attacker was too close to mistake her for anyone else.
Blowing out of breath, Holly turned and walked to the railing to peer at the tables below. The great hall was bustling now with activity, the tables full of people arriving for the evening meal. But his eyes immediately found and settled on the women at the head table. They were gathered in a group surrounding Jetta, where she sat on the bench seat, and appearing to fuss with her hair.
Rory took Jetta's call off to examine her head, Niels murmured, moving to stand next to him. The ladies are now replacing it.
I thought she said her call cushioned her head and saved her from harm, Holly said with sudden concern.
He wouldn't have left her had he thought she was wounded.
She did, and it did, Niels assured him. But Rory checked to be sure.
Oh.
He relaxed a little.
And she did not get away completely without injury, Niels added, alarming him all over again until he added, she twisted and banged her ankle in the fall. Rory thought at first it was broken, but then decided nay. It hurts her to walk on it, though. Uncle Akir had to carry her to the table.
Despite having already known this news, Ollie scowled as he moved to the top of the stairs. Before he could start down, Niels asked,
what are we going to do about this latest attack?
Aye, Dougal said and added, and how are we going to sort out whether Katie or Jetta was the target of the arrow, and whether the stew was poisoned?
None of that matters,
Ollie said firmly, and swore every single one of the men gasped at his words like old women. Turning to face them, he pointed out,
someone shot Katie with an arrow and attacked Jetta. Both of those are certainties. I want both women guarded night and day. I also want the passages and tunnel locked off.
You can do that? Cam asked with interest.
Aye.
Ollie said simply, not bothering to explain that the entrance at the cave could be locked, as could the entrance to the stairs from the tunnels, as well as the entrances to the passages from the stairs. The ancestor who had built the castle and its tunnels had been no fool. He knew secrets got out, and it was best to be able to lock off the entrances should anyone discover that particular secret.
We can split up, Cam suggested. Half can help guard Katie and half to watch Jetta.
Holly shook his head.
I'll put 4 soldiers on my wife and watch her myself as well. The rest of you stick to the original plans to guard Katie.
When no one commented and they all just stared at him, wide-eyed, Holly frowned.
What?
You called her your wife, brother,
Dougal said solemnly. Ollie stiffened and tried to think if he had, but then didn't care.
Mayhap I did, but it matters little. She's going to be my wife on the morrow if I can convince her to have me. I'm telling her the truth and asking her to marry me this night.
Ollie,
Rory said with a frown.
I ken you fear it could set back her healing,
he growled.
But her being dead would set it back a hell of a lot further.
Rory's mouth grew tight. And you think marrying her will help keep her safe?
It can no hurt, he said grimly. And if her family is somehow behind this, then aye, it might keep her safe.
Rory raised his eyebrows. I thought you had no wish for her to marry you merely to save herself.
I am hoping 'twill not be for that reason,
Ollie admitted solemnly.
But, if 'tis...
He sighed and shrugged.
I would rather see her alive than hold on to my pride and see her dead.
But you do not even ken if marrying her will save her, Rory pointed out. These attacks may not be by her family. How could they ken she was here?
They could have overheard Alec or Geordi asking questions about a ship that sank and suspected the mast she was on was found,
he pointed out.
That's possible,
Dougal said thoughtfully. And then they need only have followed them home here to Buchanan to find Jetta.
Cam snorted at the suggestion. They would no need to follow them anywhere. You boys all look alike, and what with your mercenary work over the years, and you each having financial interests that are so varied, Dougal with his horses, Niels with his sheep, Rory with his healing, and so on, he said, for example. Everyone in Scotland kens a Buchanan when they see him. There you have it, Ollie said quietly. It could very well be Jetta's family behind the attacks. Although I dinna ken why they'd want her dead if they were trying to marry her off to some murderous bastard, he added with frustration. Shaking his head, he continued on. And I'll no ken that until Jetta remembers. Mayhap telling her that her name is not Jetta and reminding her of what she said when we first found her will help her regain her memories. Well, I'd suggest you wait to have that talk with her until after the sup, Uncle Akir said, drawing their attention to the fact that he now stood on the top step of the stairs. Ollie glanced at him with surprise, wondering how much he'd heard.
Because Alec and the other man are back from the hunt. The maids are bringing out the sup as we speak, and wee Jetta is hungry enough she asked me to come fetch you,
he announced, and then arched an eyebrow.
You ken the lass needs to eat to regain her strength, and I'm thinking she'll need strength for the conversation you're planning to have with her.
Ollie shifted his gaze to the table below and noted that the women had all sat down now. He could clearly see Jetta peering his way and the encouraging smile she was giving him.
"Aye," he said. "I'll hold off until after the sup."
"Warn me before you talk to her," Rory said quietly. "And call me if you need me." When Ollie nodded, Rory turned to go back into the room where Katie, Geordi and Conran were. The moment the door closed, Ollie turned to the other men and raised his eyebrows.
"Is there anything else anyone can think of that we need to discuss before we go down?"
When everyone shook their heads, Ollie started down the stairs, his gaze seeking out Jetta as he went. She was listening to something Maureen was saying now and smiling widely. She had a beautiful smile. It was one he hoped to enjoy the rest of his life, if Jetta would have him. Unfortunately, he wasn't at all sure she would, and the worry that she might not was making his stomach roil. He had no appetite at all just now, and would have preferred to drag her above stairs and get the coming conversation over with. But he would wait until after she'd eaten. She needed to eat. Chapter 12.
So your maid, Joyce, stayed behind to watch the girls?
Jetta glanced up from her food to peer curiously at Sade when Edith asked her that question.
Aye, Sade said. I wanted to bring them, but Alpin was harping on about dragging the babies across the country while so young, and what if there was danger, and so on. So I finally gave in and agreed to leave them at MacDonald with him and Joyce.
She grimaced now and admitted,
It has only been a day, and I already miss them.
Maureen grinned and admitted,
There was a day I was thinking 'twould be better were you graced with lads only and no lasses.
She shook her head and then added,
And then you had Trip. Just a minute,
Sade interrupted.
What do you mean you were thinking 'twould be better did I have only lads? Murine arched her eyebrows. "Do you no recall how ye explained the bedding to me the night Dougal and I married?"
"Aye," Sid said at once. "What was wrong with that? I thought it was brilliant."
"Brilliant?" she asked with a snort.
"How did she explain it?"
Edith asked curiously from the other side of Jetta and Ollie.
"She..."
"Just a minute," Murine said suddenly and stood up to hurry away from the table. Jetta watched her go and then noticed that the men had all stopped speaking to stare after her too. She also noticed that Murine's husband, Dougal, was looking amused. It made Jetta suspect he had already heard how his sister had explained the bedding to his young wife.
"Here we are."
Jetta glanced around at that announcement to find that Murine had returned. She had not reclaimed her seat, however, but had approached from the other side of the table so that they could all see her. The woman was carrying a loaf of bread and the biggest carrot she had ever seen, one that was so dirty it looked fresh from the ground. It was also incredibly knobby and twisted, Jetta noted with curiosity.
"Right, I shall explain it to Jetta, just as Sid explained it to me,"
Murine announced with a wicked grin that suggested this would be fun. She then set down the carrot and bread, and instead picked up her own and Jetta's wine. Handing Jetta hers, Murine lifted her own and announced,
"Sid seemed terribly thirsty and downed her own wine in one gulp that day, so..."
Murine downed the drink in one long gulp and then set it down on the table with a grimace and said,
"All right."
Jetta merely held her wine and watched uncertainly as Murine picked up the carrot and loaf of bread. Holding up the loaf, Murine turned with it so everyone in the family could see, and then turned back to Jetta and announced,
"This is you."
"It is?"
Jetta asked uncertainly.
"Exactly what I said," Murine announced with amusement. At which point, Sid frowned at the bread, and then she did this.
Setting the loaf on the tabletop, Murine took Dougal's skein dhu when he held it out and used it to slice the loaf in half. Setting one half aside, Murine then sliced a slit down the centre of the soft part of the other, where it had been separated from the first. Apparently finished, Murine straightened and held the half-loaf up with the crusty side against her palm, and the soft centre with the slit facing Jetta, as she announced,
"This is you, and this..."
She held up the rather large, knobby and very dirty carrot.
"Is Ollie?"
"Looks like Ollie could use a bath," Cam said with amusement. "Looks like he spent time with one too many light scouts," Greer countered. "Are those knobby things supposed to be sores?"
Murine grimaced and then glanced at Ollie and said apologetically,
"The one Sid used for Dougal wasn't quite as big, but it was even dirtier and knobbier."
"As it should be," Ollie said mildly.
Cam chuckled and then raised and lowered his eyebrows suggestively and asked,
"Aye, but how did Sid ken how big a carrot she should use? She used to spy on us when we were skinny dipping as lads."
Niels tartled with amusement.
"I didn't no pick the carrot," Sid said with exasperation. "I just asked me maid to bring me a loaf of bread and a carrot."
"Enough,"
Murine interrupted the teasing and laughter.
"No interruptions, please. As Sid said, this is difficult enough."
When they all fell silent then, Murine nodded and then paused as if trying to recall what came next. After a moment, she muttered,
"Oh, aye,"
and stuck the carrot down the neckline of her gown to nestle between her breasts.
"Oh, see," Niels said with surprise. "Sid was giving you some advanced instruction."
Murine glanced to Niels with confusion, which Jetta thoroughly understood. She was a bit confused by his comment as well.
However, while she remained confused, Murine peered down at the carrot between her breasts and quite suddenly seemed to understand, because her cheeks immediately turned a bright crimson and she reached as if to withdraw the carrot.
Don't! Dougal said, making her pause. Ignore my idiot brother, wife, and continue with it just as Sid did.
Smiling gratefully at her husband, Murine nodded and let her hand drop from the carrot. Leaving it tucked snugly between her breasts, she soldiered on.
As I mentioned, Sid was very thirsty, and at this point tucked the carrot just there while she poured herself another goblet of wine.
Murine picked up her empty goblet, pretended to down another glass full, and then moved in front of Jetta again, and held up the bread and empty goblet.
Right, this is you, and this is... Oh, hell!
Murine made an exaggerated face of exasperation and suggested she was still mimicking Sid, and set down the goblet to retrieve the carrot instead, before starting again.
This is you, and this is Ollie, and this is what will happen tonight,
she announced and pushed the larger end of the carrot into the slit in the bread. Although, of course, the carrot was much larger than the slit, and what she was really doing was mashing the bread dough with the carrot head, hammering it over and over again as she repeatedly drove the carrot into the dough and pulled it out.
Dear God in heaven!
Jetta heard Ollie breathe those horrified words as she gaped at what Murine was doing to the poor bread, and then Murine announced,
But it's much nicer than it looks. He'll kiss you and such, and you'll get all excited and want to punch him hard in the face.
What?
Jetta gasped, her eyes wide.
That is what Sid told me.
Murine assured her cheerfully as she jammed the carrot into the bread, as if the orange vegetable was her fist and the loaf Ollie's face.
Jetta turned to Sid askance. Punch him? Well, that's how I feel, Sid said with a shrug. That if he does not end this sweet torture and give me my release soon, I will have to punch him.
The men around them were divided in their responses. Sid's brothers burst out laughing. Uncle Akir rolled his eyes and shook his head. Cam looked startled at the words, and Greer just grinned.
But, Murine continued, Sid said that you'd feel like an explosion had gone off inside you, and 'twould be so nice.
Murine glanced skyward and released a long, starry-eyed sigh, as if pondering the release, but she was obviously still portraying Sade's conversation with her because in the blink of an eye, the expression was replaced with an inquisitive expression as she turned to Jetta and asked,
Understand?
Unable to speak at the moment, Jetta nodded weakly.
Oh, thank God,
Murine muttered and tossed her props over her shoulder and then eyed Jetta's wine and asked,
Are you going to drink that?
Jetta shook her head. Murine smiled.
Which was my answer as well, and as I watched, Sid grabbed it up and chugged it down. It was at that point I thought it might be best all around did Sid have all sons, and no daughters with Greer. For surely no young lass should have to hear the marriage bed described that way.
She finished and then signalled the end of her little show with a curtsy.
Bravo!
Niels said on a laugh, beginning to clap.
Aye, for a minute there I actually believed you to be Sid,
Cam said with a grin as he too clapped.
This is the second time I've seen it and it still amuses me,
Joe chuckled. Beaming, Murine gave another curtsy and then hurried around the table to reclaim her seat. Biting her lip, Jetta glanced to Sid, then to see how she was taking all of this. But Sid was sitting and looking completely unperturbed. Catching Jetta's concerned gaze, she shrugged mildly and said,
"'Tis what happens."
Her words brought a groan from Ollie that drew Jetta around to see the dismay on his face. Frowning, she shifted her gaze uncertainly toward Dougal. Her brother-in-law gave her a reassuring smile and patted Ollie on the back. "Relax, brother. 'Tis fine."
"I dinna see what everyone finds so funny," Sid said, drawing Jetta's attention away from her husband. "There was nothing wrong with me instruction to Maureen. That is exactly what happens."
Jetta bit her lip to hide her amusement and then heard Ollie mutter in response to Dougal.
"Hey, you can say that. You'd already bedded Maureen when she was given that horrible instruction. But Jetta is still untried and like to see that way forever after that display."
No one else heard the words. Jetta barely caught them herself, and yet, for a moment, the entire room went silent around her. It took a moment for her to realize that it was her. The room hadn't gone silent at all. She could see people moving and talking, but could hear nothing. There was no clinking of metal, no light-hearted chatter, no laughter. Everything was suddenly silent, which left her mind screaming as it rushed madly about like a mouse loose in a pantry full of food. She was still untried. Had they never consummated their marriage? Why? Did he not find her attractive enough? Had he not wanted to marry her? Or was it the other way around? Had she refused him her bed? Perhaps, as she had feared, she'd been repulsed by his scar before losing her memories. Jetta could not imagine that, though. He was an attractive man, despite the scar. But perhaps she had been understandably shy and reticent on their wedding night, and he had taken that as rejection. Perhaps the shipwreck and her head injuries were the chance they'd needed to repair a marriage that had been limping along under misunderstandings and misperceptions. Aye, that seemed possible. And if so, she would grasp that chance with both hands and fix everything. For she had a good man, and was quite sure she could have an amazing marriage if she just worked at it. That decision seemed to act like a switch, turning the sound back on for Jetta as Maureen said,
"I love you, Sid, and you ken it. And much to my surprise, while I thought it might be best did you have lads and no lasses, now you've had the triplets, I see how lucky they are."
"Triplets?"
Jetta echoed with surprise, briefly distracted from her worries.
"Aye,"
Maureen told her, leaning forward to see her past Sid and Greer.
"Sid gave birth to triplets just 6 months ago." "Oh, my God! I am an aunt, thrice over!"
Jetta gasped, eyes wide. She then frowned as she wondered if she was still an aunt, if her marriage had not yet been consummated. Were she and Ollie even legally married without the consummation?
"We all are,"
Edith said excitedly, reclaiming her attention.
"Well, except for Jo, but she's their godmother."
Jo nodded with a smile.
"And we are going to betroth my Bernard to the eldest girl, little Rona. And then you'll be family too,"
Edith said with a grin.
"We'll all be related."
Jetta smiled faintly as the women all grinned at each other, and then commented,
"Rona is a lovely name. What names did you give the other girls?" "Sorka and Elsa,"
Sid said at once. Jetta's eyes widened incredulously.
"You named one after me?"
Ollie froze when Jetta said that. He was not the only one. There was a sudden and complete silence among the people seated around him, and no one at the high table was now moving or speaking. All sat gaping at Jetta with wide eyes, even himself. He sat still, watching her eyes round with realization and then flood with emotion as she turned to stare at him. He saw confusion, heartbreak, fear and grief, and then pain. Eyebrows drawing together in concentration, she stared at him briefly, and then stood up as if wanting to escape the knowledge filling her. But the moment she put weight on her foot, she cried out in pain and then tumbled sideways over the trestle table bench.
her head plummeting toward the great hall floor. "Jessa!" Ollie roared, leaping to his feet but was not quick enough to catch her before she hit the floor. Cursing himself for failing her, he knelt to gather her into his arms.
"She hit her head again,"
Alex said with dismay, kneeling across her body from him.
"The Crispin cushioned her head when she fell down the stairs. I'm sure it did this time, too,"
Sade said, joining them. "Then why has she lost consciousness again?" Ollie asked grimly.
"I dinna ken,"
Sade admitted, eyeing Jetta unhappily.
"I'll fetch Rory,"
Alex said, straightening. "Have him come to my room," Ollie ordered, standing up and carrying Jetta toward the stairs on his brother's heels. He peered down at Jetta as he took the stairs, noting the pallor of her face and the pained wince her brows were forming. He suspected she'd regained her memory, or at least part of it. Something about her expression after she'd said, "You named one after me," had told him she was remembering something. Probably who she was and, more important to him, who she wasn't. Ollie was quite sure she now knew he was not her husband, and he was scared to death about what that might mean for him. He'd not got to tell her himself, or to explain. And if Sade was right, that was a very bad thing.
"Pull back the linen and furs so he can lay her in the bed."
Ollie glanced around at that order from Sade, somewhat surprised to find that he'd reached the master bedchamber while distracted by his thoughts. Well, they'd reached the master bedchamber, he realized as he noted that his entire family had followed him, from Uncle Akir on down to Joe and Cam Sinclair, who weren't strictly family yet, but would be someday if their son married young Rona. The only ones missing were Rory, Alec, Conran, and Jordy. Ollie had barely had that thought when Rory rushed into the room with Conran and Alec on his heels.
"Alec said Jetta hit her head, again,"
Rory growled, rushing to the bed.
"What happened?"
"What happened is she remembered her name was not Jetta, but Sorka or Elsa," Cam announced solemnly. Rory's eyebrows rose.
"Which is it? Sorka or Elsa?"
"We dinna ken,"
Sade admitted, eyeing Jetta with concern.
"We were talking about Rona marrying Bernard someday. Jetta asked what my other two daughters' names were. I told her and she said, 'You named one after me.' And then she fainted,"
Edith added worriedly.
"I do not think she fainted,"
Maureen argued.
"She tried to stand up, and when she put her weight on her injured ankle, she cried out and fell, hitting her head."
"Either way, it would seem her name is either Sorka or Elsa,"
Joe pointed out. Much to Ollie's relief, Rory ignored the women and moved up beside him to examine Jetta.
"I pulled back the linens and furs," Dougal said. "You can lay her in the bed."
"Just let me remove her caul first,"
Rory muttered, working on the headpiece.
"'Twould be harder to remove with her lying down."
Ollie grunted agreement and shifted his arm a little lower on Jetta's back to keep it out of the way as his brother fussed with the headpiece.
"Do you want me to do it?"
Maureen offered, moving up beside him. Rory did not answer at first, but after struggling briefly with the Crispin, gave up and stepped back.
"Aye, please."
Maureen immediately took his place and made short work of removing the headpiece. She then stepped away so Rory could step up again and examine Jetta's head, first visually, and then by running his hands over it.
"So her name is Sorka or Elsa?"
Edith murmured.
"Can you imagine? She has the same name as one of your daughters, Sade. 'Tis like it was meant to be."
"Aye,"
Joe agreed, and then added,
"But 'tis strange. Her accent is English, but both Sorka and Elsa are good Scots names."
"Mayhap her mother was Scottish, but her father English, so she was raised there,"
Maureen suggested.
"She has no new bumps or injuries,"
Rory announced, drawing his attention again.
"Lay her down and tell me what happened. She remembered her name. Is that all?"
"I dinna think so,"
Ollie admitted as he set her gently in the bed.
"I think she remembered a lot more than her name.
What makes you think that?
Alec asked with surprise as they watched Rory lift her eyelids and peer at her eyes.
Her expression when she turned to me. She looked.
Ollie paused and frowned as he recalled the gamut of emotions that had rushed across her face.
Very upset,
he said finally, if a little lamely. Considering the matter, he frowned and added,
although she did get that pained face she gets whenever she tries to remember something. So she may not have remembered everything. She appeared to be trying to remember more.
In other words, you do not ken what she remembered, Rory said, finishing his examination and straightening to eye Ollie, as he said. Her name may be all she did remember, and is upset because we have not been calling her by it.
Which probably told her we've been lying to her all this time,
Sid pointed out grimly, and then scowled at Ollie.
I warned you. I told you you needed to tell her the truth ere she discovered it for herself. Now she'll know ken what to think, and will no trust us when all we want to do is keep her safe.
I was going to tell her,
Ollie assured her defensively.
He was,
Rory admitted, his tone sharp as he added, despite my insistence that he should not and that she needed to feel safe and loved in the bosom of her family to heal. He was going to ignore that advice and tell her after the sup.
I was going to ask her to marry me too, though,
Ollie pointed out, glowering at him.
That should have let her know she was cared for and we'd be kept safe.
Safe? From what?
Ollie's gaze jerked from Rory, down to Jetta, where she lay with her eyes now open.
Chapter 13.
Jetta, you're awake,
Ollie said with relief, settling on the side of the bed and taking her hand.
Sokka,
she said tightly. Avoiding meeting her gaze, she tugged her hand free of his and repeated,
safe from what?
The man your family was sending you to marry and whoever pushed you down the stairs,
Ollie said quietly. Trying not to be hurt by her pulling away from him, he let his own hand rest in his lap. She met his gaze then, her eyes wide.
I am to marry someone else, and you allowed me to think we were husband and wife. You let me betray my own betrothed.
Nay, he said at once. He was no your betrothed.
Confusion immediately filled her face.
But you said...
You were somewhat conscious when we found you, and seemed to still have your memories then,
Ollie interrupted to explain.
And when I tried to soothe you and said we'd find your family and see you safely to them, you got quite upset.
Aye,
Alec put in, moving closer.
You fashed something awful at the thought of our taking you to your family. You seemed terrified and said something about a cat and a white lady. And a betrothed who was not your betrothed, but you were being forced to marry him, and how he'd kill you like his last wife.
Nodding to emphasize his words, he added,
Ollie had to promise you we'd no take you to your family until you were hale and healthy again to calm you down.
Jetta frowned, her gaze sliding between Alec and Ollie now.
But when you woke up, you did not remember anything,
Ollie added solemnly.
Even who you were. And you asked me if I was your brother, and when I said nay, you decided I was your husband, and...
And you did not bother to correct me,
she said, her voice sharp.
I did not really get the chance,
he said, and reminded her.
Mavis came in, and then Rory, and...
And?
Rory interrupted.
When he told me you'd mistaken him for your husband... I told him it was better to let you think that for a bit. Why?
She asked with amazement.
Because it soothed you to think you were among loved ones, and I felt sure you'd heal faster were you feeling safe and cared for. You were still very ill at the time, he reminded her. You'd no had anything but broth dribbled down your throat for 3 weeks,
You were rail thin and so weak I was not even sure you'd survive. But I thought you'd have a better chance at surviving did you think you were safe and home, rather than kenning that you were in a strange place among strangers.
Jetta breathed out a sigh and closed her eyes wearily.
Jetta? I mean Sorka,
Rory began.
Jetta,
she interrupted quietly, knowing she was probably confusing them. She'd just corrected Ollie when he'd called her Jetta moments ago and referred to herself as Sorka, and was now doing the opposite. But she was confused too. While she knew her name was Sorka, she'd become used to being called Jetta. Besides, she had no idea who Sorka was and wouldn't until she regained her memories. Now she felt like Jetta Buchanan. But she wasn't Jetta Buchanan, she thought unhappily.
Jetta, then, Rory said solemnly before continuing. I'm sorry if my decision to withhold the truth upsets you. But I stand by that decision, lass. Despite the trouble it caused in the family, I think it did help you.
Trouble?
She asked with surprise, her eyes blinking open. Rory hesitated and then said, I'll explain the trouble in a minute. But first you have to tell us. Did you remember anything else but your first name? Do you recall your family name? Or where you're from? Or anything? He asked. Ollie watched her expression change and knew the answer to Rory's question before she spoke.
Nay,
she admitted unhappily.
Just that I am Sorka. And that my mother named me that because she knew from the moment I came squalling into the world that I would be a bright light in her life. She told me that ere dying in my arms.
She admitted, the grief he'd seen earlier washing over her face again. Forcing it back, she said.
I tried to remember more. I tried to force it. But the pain got so bad I could not bear it any more, and then I put weight on my ankle and fell.
Everyone was silent for a minute, and then Ollie patted her hand and murmured, I'm sure the rest will come. Much to his relief, she didn't pull away from his touch this time. He didn't push, though, merely patted her hand and then withdrew his own. Peering at Rory, Jetta raised her eyebrows in question.
The troubles caused in the family by not telling me who I really was. You were going to explain?
Oh, aye.
Clearing his throat, Rory said, First, Ollie and I came to loggerheads several times over his behaviour around you. He appeared to have trouble remembering that the two of you were not really married. Jetta immediately began to blush, and Ollie suspected she was recalling those times in question. He certainly was, now that Rory had mentioned them. And for a moment he basked in the memory of the taste of her, the sound of her excited cries, the way she responded to his kisses, and waking to find her mouth on him. That memory was particularly piquant, he thought, and then grunted and looked around with surprise when someone punched him in the arm. Spotting Sid standing next to him, scowling ferociously, he frowned and raised his eyebrows in question. His sister gave him a meaningful look and then nodded toward Jetta. Turning, he glanced at her and saw that she was not experiencing quite the same joy in the memories as he had been before Sid punched him. In fact, she was bright red and nearly squirming in the bed with apparent embarrassment, and what might be shame. Scowling, he patted her hand again and said,
You've naught to be ashamed of, lass. Ye believed we were married. Besides, your innocence is still intact.
Rather than soothe her, that made her blush deepen and she looked more distressed than ever. Ollie was relieved when Rory continued. The other trouble it caused was with Sid. She was most upset that we were not telling you the truth, and took both Ollie and me to task for it. She even tried to convince us to tell you everything.
I did, Sid assured her. Unfortunately, men are stupid. At least my brothers are. They would no listen to me.
Jetta offered Sid a crooked smile.
The fact that they're sitting here telling you this instead of telling you what's most important proves it,
Sid added, turning to scowl at Ollie briefly. Not having a clue what she was referring to, Ollie glowered back. Apparently recognizing that he didn't know what she was talking about, Sid said with exasperation,
Greer told me you planned to tell Jetta everything after the sup and ask her to marry you.
Oh, aye. He agreed quickly and turned to Jetta, nodding his head firmly. I plan to tell you tonight.
Why?
She asked at once. Nonplussed, Ollie stared at her.
Why, what?
She hesitated and then asked,
Why were you going to tell me now, after so long leaving me in the dark?
Ollie paused to consider before answering, suspecting he was treading on uneven ground here. And then he said,
I wanted to tell you from the first, but did no wish to risk your healing. However, what with someone pushing you down the stairs and whatnot, we began to worry this may have something to do with your family, or who they were trying to make you marry, and it did seem you'd be safer if you were married, and you had to ken you were no married before I could ask you to marry me.
So, you were going to tell me so that you could ask me to marry you, and you want to marry me to keep me safe?
She asked with a small frown.
Aye.
Ollie said, and then glanced around when one of the women gasped. His eyebrows rose as he took in the various reactions of his family. His brothers, as well as Cam and Greer, were all nodding as if he was making perfect sense. The women, however, at least Edith, Maureen and Joe, all looked horrified. But it was the reactions of Uncle Akir, Rory and Sid that troubled him most. Rory was wincing. Uncle Akir was shaking his head and rolling his eyes skyward as if silently asking his dead brother, Ollie's father, how he had managed to raise such an idiot. And Sid had her lips pursed and a somewhat confounded expression, as if she thought his answer made sense, but also thought it was not quite right and she could not for the life of her figure out why. That was most troubling to him. He understood Lady's expected sweet words and romantic gestures, but he was not that kind of man. However, if his own sister, who was in his estimation as far from a romantic as could be found, well, if she thought his answer lacking, that was bad. Scratching the back of his head, he peered back at Jetta and noted her dejected pose. She was peering at her hands where they lay on her chest, and she looked disappointed. Wounded, even, he thought.
Tell the lass how you feel about her, you dolt!
Uncle Akir hissed. Ollie took a moment to scowl at the man, and then turned back to Jetta to see that she'd raised her eyes and was watching him, hopefully. That was when it suddenly occurred to him that he had never given any indication that he even had feelings for her, which he supposed wasn't fair. After all, Jetta had said how she felt about him repeatedly since waking. She told him she wanted him, that she felt lucky to have him to husband, even that she loved him. Of course, that had all been influenced by her belief that they were married, but that didn't make it any less true. He, however, well, he had not even told her he liked her, all he realized now. He had a vague recollection of saying she was wee and cared for in response to a comment of hers once, but other than that he'd not said one word about his own feelings for her. And it seemed to him that he probably should. Slipping off the bed to kneel on the floor beside it, Ollie took her hands in his and said solemnly,
Lass, I thought you beautiful the minute I laid eyes on your face. I wanted you from the minute we dragged you out of the ocean and onto me boat. and I decided to keep you the minute you saw me face and did not flinch, weep, or scream at the scar, but instead called me your angel.
Did she?
Edith asked eagerly.
Aye,
Alec said. She said he was an angel sent by God to save her, and touched his cheek as if he were a precious gift.
Oh,
the women sighed together. Ignoring them, Ollie continued.
For the 3 weeks I tended you, I worried every minute of every day that you'd no survive, and the thought distressed me something terrible. But you did survive. You woke and thought me your husband, and...
He shook his head and then took a deep breath, let it out, and said,
I dinna ken if what I feel is love, but I think of you all the time, even when you're no with me. And these days since you've woken have been the happiest of my life.
When her smile widened, he added,
And not only that, I see you everywhere, lass. Every maid I see with long black hair reminds me of you. Even some without hair, or, well, with her hair covered.
He explained and shook his head before continuing.
I worry about you constantly, too. I hated being away from you when I had to return to Buchanan without you. I like spending time with you. I like playing chess with you and Nine Men's Morris, and I like talking to you. I just enjoy your company. But I like kissing and touching you best of all, and I'm aching to bed you. I want you for my wife, lass. I want to wake every day to your smiling face. I want to have beautiful bairns with you that we can raise together to be fine, strong men and women. And I want to live to be an old man and die in your arms, for 'tis as close to heaven as I've ever been.
Someone snuffled behind him, and Ollie glanced around, scowling when he saw that the women were all weeping like bairns. Christ, even Alec was weeping like a girl. But not Sid. Her eyes were glassy, but she was manfully keeping her tears from dropping. He could always count on Sid. Turning back to Jetta, he blew out a breath and said solemnly,
But I do not want you to marry me only for the safety it offers. I'll keep you safe, married or no. But I'd rather you only marry me if you have soft feelings for me too, and want to spend your life with me the way I do you.
Aye,
she said softly. Ollie hesitated, and then asked uncertainly,
Aye, what?
I want to marry you for you,
she said on a soft laugh, and then tugged her hands from his and framed his face with them.
Have I not already told you I love you? Mayhap at first it was because I thought you my husband, and assumed that I had loved you ere the shipwreck where I lost my memories. But I quickly came to see why I would love you. You are all I could wish for in a husband, Ollie. In truth, you are probably more than I ever dared hope for. I would consider myself lucky to be your wife, bear your bairns and die an old woman in your arms. I see a happy future with you.
Ollie grinned, but hearing more sniffling behind him, asked,
Even if marrying me means you'll be stuck with my large, nosy and interfering family?
Glancing past him, she grinned as she took in the people surrounding them and nodded.
Aye. Even then, husband. I mean, Ollie.
Grimacing, she added.
Sorry. I am so used to calling you that. I just...
Well, in truth, you've every right to call him that, lass,
Uncle Akir said now.
You may know I've had the benefit of a priest, but you're married by habit and repute now.
When she peered at him uncertainly, he explained,
You've lived together as a couple. Ye calling him husband and him even calling you wife a time or two. Ye presented yourselves as a couple to society, or at least us.
He shrugged.
You're handfasted, which is as good as married here in Scotland.
The courts would say that legally, you are wed.
Oh, she murmured, but then frowned. Certain he knew what she was thinking, Ollie assured her.
We will have a priest marry us all good and proper, though. In fact, turning